Once we start drilling, the first two holes yielded 70 meter thickness. And then the last two holes, which is number three and four, they actually gave us 100 meter thickness. Now, to put this in perspective, meaning in comparison to other large potash deposits, in Saskatchewan and in Russia, you get to 15, 20 meters, that's already very, very thick. In our case, we're half 100 meters thick. So that's a huge advantage that translates into lower economics as well. So those, I think, in combination with infrastructure advantages, really set us apart from many other projects, meaning that, all the elements are in there, plus, of course, the, funding support that is coming from DFC and other large parties that were brought to the table that will allow us to actually take this all the way to production.
Hey, it's me, Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks, and today I am joined by Farhad Abbasov, a chairman of Millennial Potash. How are you, Farhad?
Doing very well, Steve. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. I am curious about your company, but before we begin, if you can tell us about your website, where you're trading, and we'll go ahead and start.
Yeah, of course, Steve. So the website is pretty simple. It's millennialpotash.com. And our main exchange is actually Toronto Stock Exchange Venture, as you can see in the back, TSXV, and the ticker is MLP. But for U.S. Listeners, actually, we trade over the counter as well, and you can see that there as well. It's over the counter, MLP and F. So depending on, let me move my head, and that's a Frankfurt, X0D.
Farhad, if you can just tell us a little bit about Millennial Potash. I know you're the founder, but how did that story come about? How does your story intersect with Millennial? And if you can just give us the elevator pitch of what it's all about.
Sure, Steve. When I say I'm the founder, actually our team is the founder because we've been together for almost 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So what we do, Steve, we basically do top-down analysis on several commodities. It's usually industrial minerals. And if we like something going forward 3 to 5 years, meaning we see some sort of an interesting dynamic in supply-demand picture, geopolitical angle, et cetera, we try to find a project that has been previously explored, and we take it all the way to the point where it's ready to go into construction. Sometimes we build it. Sometimes, actually, we exit before the project hits production. So this project came across our desk about 3 years ago. Before that, we had another company also called Millennial. It was Millennial Lithium. We actually developed all the way to the point where it was ready to go into construction. We had a bidding war for it. Ganfeng Lithium, CATL from China were bidding for it. In the end, we sold it to Lithium Americas. Before, we had two other potash companies. So believe it or not, this is our third potash project. And when we came across this project, we did quite a bit of due diligence, almost 6 months. This is a project in Gabon, in Central Africa, on the Atlantic coast. We flew there and we did quite a bit of, again, research into not only the project itself, but also the operating environment in the country, permitting and so forth. And we decided that, the project has tremendous upside. So since then, we've done quite a bit of work since we took this project under our wings.
So you said you and your team, this is your third potash company?
Correct. Very
awesome.
Unusual.
I wanted to bring you on because I've been interested in potash and I don't speak to too many of you guys. And so my understanding is that you guys are different from the traditional mining of, what people think of, shaft and tunnel. If you can explain a little bit about, is it solution mining? If you can just tell me kind of a little bit more of what that looks like and what potash even is.
Yeah. Look, Steve, potash is fertilizer, right? So it was one of the key fertilizers alongside with phosphate and nitrogen. And most of potash comes from three countries. It's Canada, Russia, and Belarus. Now, probably about 70% of potash production, potash mining, comes through underground operations, shaft and sinking a shaft and going horizontal and so forth. So what do you actually, when you say traditional conventional mining, that's what you have in mind. Now, our approach is a little bit different. We actually prefer solution mining. About 30% of potash supply comes through solution mining. There's solution mining operations in Canada, in the US, in Germany. And the reason we like it, Steve, is twofold. One, it keeps your cost structure low, and it has a minimal environmental effect. So basically what it is, you drill into your ore body, you pump water, underground. It can be brackish water, industrial water, obviously fresh water, or even seawater. You dissolve potash underground, you pump that brine back up to the surface, you evaporate water, and you go through processing of potash, which is basically separating from salt. We like it because, I mean, maybe when you get a chance, maybe if you edit this and you can actually insert one of these photos from our presentation, you will see how minimal the impact is. It doesn't look anything like a mining operation. It looks more like a natural gas operation because that's all you see. The wellheads, gauges sticking out, pipes. So in other words, it doesn't require any kind of a significant work on surface, which is important for us because that's what we like to see, be it in Saskatchewan or in Africa, anywhere else where we have minimal impact. So that's why we stick with solution mining. Previous two projects that I mentioned, the potash projects, they were also solution mining.
So, where are you guys exactly? Where's your flagship? Is it in Africa?
In the country of Gabon. So Gabon is a West African nation, or in Central African, you can say that as well, but it's on the coast, on Atlantic coast. Gabon is actually one of the wealthiest nations in Africa, Stephen, if you look at GDP per capita, primarily because it's an oil producer, it's an OPEC member, and it has a small population, less than 2 million people. So actually, it is, I think, the wealthiest nation on GDP per capita basis on the continental part of Africa, outside of some islands. They've been trying to diversify away from oil and gas in the last few years. So they've been trying to bring a lot of foreign direct investment into mining. There are quite a few large operations there already, and we are the only large potash project there. And we've been, as I said, fast-tracking this project. So we're already going through feasibility, environmental, and social impact studies, and we'll talk about that as well, of course.
So when you say fast track, what does that look like in terms of timeline? Do you find it's pretty a friendly jurisdiction, pro mining, stable? If you can talk about the political environment and the reforms that are maybe
First
happening
of
there.
all, Steve, I'll tell you what fast track means. I'll put it in comparison. There are quite a few potash companies. Maybe you've come across some of them. They've been at it for 15 years. I'm not kidding. And they're
Yeah.
based at the same level where we're going to be in 6 months. And we got our hands on this project only in 2023. So by meaning fast track, I literally mean fast tracking it, meaning doing it in a way where you can get to the point where the project or the project owners, in our case, ourselves, can make a decision to move forward with production, not within 3 to 4 years max. Not sitting on it for 10, 15 years. So that's exactly how we've done our previous projects too. Now, in terms of Gabon as a jurisdiction, as a mining jurisdiction, so it is actually one of the most stable countries in Africa. It is what we call non-AK-47 country, meaning there you don't see people, with weapons walking around, which is very important for us. Very
Yeah,
safe,
important
very
for me
clean.
too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and we choose those countries. We don't go, no matter how great the project may be, we want to make sure that safety, obviously, our people are safe, and safety comes first for us. So that's very important. And the government is extremely supportive now at all levels. I mean, we have very good relations with His Excellency the President, his administration. We've met with him a few times. And of course, with the Minister of Mining, the Minister of Environment, our local, I mean, there's no immediate local population. Like, the nearest town is about almost 40 kilometers away, but still we treat them as our local population. So it's very local people, so we have very good relations with them as well. Look, I'm so far in the last 3 years, we've seen tremendous support come from them in terms of permitting, in terms of help with infrastructure development, and so forth. And we're hoping that early next year we'll be able to secure a mining permit, meaning exploitation production permit, so that we can proceed with our construction later next year.
So without giving away your sauce, I mean, 15 years versus 6 months, and how'd you pull that off? I mean, is it just the relationships that you've built?
No, I mean, Steve, I mean, the secret is actually doing in-depth due diligence before you get involved. I think that's step number one, because projects like potash in general, but of this magnitude specifically, have to have specific elements in place. Doesn't mean that they're available to you, but right away, but they're there, meaning that you don't have to really wreck your brain trying to bring that in. So, for example, if we're talking about solution mining, I mean, this is besides geology, besides actually having
Yeah.
commodity there in the ground, so to speak, mineral there. But if we're talking about solution mining, what you need a couple of things right off the bat. You want to make sure you have water available to you, in other words, plenty of water in
Yeah.
your vicinity. Two, You have to make sure you have access to power because, obviously you will be evaporating water, and if you're not in a dry environment, and we're not in West Africa, so you need to actually heat up water to evaporate it. So that's nothing, and natural gas is available there. And the third thing, which is very unique for potash projects in general, is that it's right on the coast. Because if you look at major potash mines in the world, like in Saskatchewan in Canada or the Urals in Russia, they're smack in the middle of the continent, in the case of Russia, in the middle of Eurasia. So it's very far away from the coast. Here, we're right there. Like literally, our port is 40 kilometers away. So that's a huge advantage. So those are the key things that we'll look at. If one of those things is not there, Steve, it's extremely difficult to make these projects work, no matter how great the project, meaning the geology may be, infrastructure may basically obviate the whole thing. Now, the second thing is execution once you take project under your control. And in this case, not only do I have a team that is, again, uniquely positioned, meaning heavily potash oriented, but we also bring in very strong supporters or backers early on. So with this project, we have the US government as our partner. So, this conversation with you is very important because very rare to have U.S. government, in this case, U.S. Development Finance Corporation, come in and support a project like ours at such an early stage. So we brought that in, and this is not the first time we've done. Like in Ethiopia, we had a potash project there. We brought an International Finance Corporation, also based in D.C., but not the U.S. organization, but it was an international organization, International Development Finance Institution called IFC. We brought them in as well. Now, by bringing them in early, you accomplish a couple of objectives. One, you throw political support behind the project. That's very important. No matter how good your relations may be, but when you have such a large organization behind you, then obviously, things go a lot faster. The second thing, financial risk, because most of these organizations obviously don't come there just to support it politically. The main driver there is to support you when the time comes to fund the project. So I think those are the things that allow us to take the project through these development stages much faster than most other companies.
So, why did you land where you are now in West? I mean, what if you can tell me a little bit about your project, the potential it has? I know that I typically ask gold companies about their grade. I mean, can you tell me what good potash looks like, and how does it compare with your peers, and just the potential that you see here compared to maybe other projects?
Yeah, Steve. So there's a geology part, and then there's infrastructure slash other things that I mentioned, the power of water, port availability or proximity and so forth. Now on geology, that's number one, of course. That was something that we looked at. I mean, again, we have quite a bit of experience in potash. So we're looking for something that could become very large, that could have some sort of significant cost advantage as well. In this case, we knew that this project was going to be large because we could actually see some historical data. We knew or we suspected that it would be very thick potash, to layers of potash or seams. And it turned out to be much thicker than we had expected. So we're thinking, we're going to probably have 30, 40 meter thickness of potash because that's what we've seen in historical data and historical exploration. But once we start drilling, the first two holes yielded 70 meter thickness. And then the last two holes, which is number three and four, they actually gave us 100 meter thickness. Now, to put this in perspective, meaning in comparison to other large potash deposits, in Saskatchewan and in Russia, you get to 15, 20 meters, that's already very, very thick. In our case, we're half 100 meters thick. So that's a huge advantage that translates into lower economics as well. So those, I think, in combination with infrastructure advantages really set us apart from many other projects, meaning that all the elements are in there, plus of course the funding support that is coming from DFC and other large parties that were brought to the table that will allow us to actually take this all the way to production.
Farhad, you talked a little bit about just the infrastructure you have, the roads, the water. I'm guessing the logistics of the shipping, you got all that. Where's the risk? I mean, with potash in general, with the jurisdiction that you're in, where's the greatest risk that you see, and how are you mitigating that?
So Steve, with projects like this, the risks are everywhere. Okay,
Okay.
so really, with no matter what you look at it. So I would say on the technical side, we have significantly mitigated the risk, meaning there's significant potash there. It's 6 billion tons of measured, indicated, and inferred. And remember, we've only covered, meaning we've only explored only 4% of the property. So the property is almost 1,500 square kilometers. So it's a half the size of Rhode Island. So that's how large it is. And we've barely scratched the surface. So I think this is going to be a massive resource. It's already very large, but it's going to be even bigger than what we have now. So I think that is significantly mitigated. Now, the country risk. The country risk, I think it's important to have very good relations, as I said, with the government and local people at all levels, right? So that we're kind of working on, and we've been very successful at it. And of course, again, with the U.S. government support, that also helps us. Having said that, there's always a risk of something happening in developing nations, but we're trying to kind of mitigate it as much as we can. Now, coming back to infrastructure, again, I mentioned that they're all there, but they need to be put together. So I would say there's still a risk of potentially not having a port ready before we hit production and so forth. But we're working with some large groups that hopefully port developers that hopefully would actually be able to build these this large deep water port for us specifically in the next 2 to 3 years so that we can actually hit production and be able to use that port. So at the same time, we have another transshipment port that is already there, so we can potentially use that as well. So I would say there's a little bit of risk on the infrastructure side. Political risk is there, but we think we're handling it pretty well. On the technical side, on geology, I think we're in a strong position.
So where are you with market
And
cap?
sorry, one other thing is funding is always an issue, right? So the funding is another risk. And with that, we brought in DFC to the table. We brought some couple of other large entities from US and Canada. And we have pretty clear visibility on where the money is going to come from. This is specifically for structure. So again, it's not done yet, but hopefully by the end of the year, early next year, we'll announce those. It will announce the funding package, and the market will see that we're fully funded by that.
So how much money do you have in the bank, and when do you find that you might have to raise more money? And if you can tell me a little bit also about your experience with how much you've raised in the past.
Sure, Steve. So we got about 30 million Canadian in the bank. That doesn't include the $3 million that is coming from the USDFC. So they already released 10% of that $3 million. So now the 2.7 million US will be coming in as we develop the project. It is those are matching funds for feasibility study. So as we spend money on feasibility study, they will be matching that. So that's one. And plus, most of our warrants are in the money. So
Good.
obviously, on a quarterly basis, those warrants get exercised and they bring in some cash as well. So we don't really need money until we get to the point where we need to raise money for construction. So for feasibility study, for social and environmental impact studies, for further drilling that we're doing right now as well, we're well funded. So we're covered for all of that. But we will need, of course, money for construction, and that's when DFC and others will come in. In terms of our raises so far, we've been very fortunate to have raised actually all our capital at successively higher price. So we started at, I think, little 40 cents, then 50 cents, and then we raised at $1.50. And the last raise we did, the most recent one was, I think it was in February, if I'm not mistaken, and raised at $3. And stock is trading at below $2 right now. So, and we have some large investors who came in. The largest shareholder we have is actually a family office out of Singapore. It's a Canadian family, but they come from agriculture. They know fertilizers quite well. They have a big position in the company. We have another very large group out of the U.S., actually one of the largest PE funds in the world, that has a big position in the company as well. Another very large fund out of Toronto has a significant position in the company. So we have, I would say, Steve, 65% of the stock is in institutional hands slash insiders. The management
Great.
owns about 15% of the stock.
How much skin in the game do you personally have?
I personally have about 10% of this of the company,
Okay.
and probably another 5-6% the rest of the money and the board.
Great. And then in terms of market cap, where are you guys right now, and how do you compare with your peers? You've mentioned the other three countries. If you can also add to that, why you guys? There are other potash companies. I find you guys intriguing, and you certainly check a lot of boxes. But if you can tell us why Millennium or
Millennial, yeah.
Millennial.
So look, I mean the issue with I'll start maybe with our market cap. So our market cap in Canadian dollars on a fully diluted basis, about $300 million. So,
Okay.
among juniors, we're probably one of the largest, primarily because I think the market recognizes that we have probably a better chance of hitting production than most of the others. Now, the reason for that, of course, some of them I already described, but if you go and look at some of these projects, and I remember in the beginning of our conversation, I mentioned some companies have been at it for 10, 15, 20 years, some of them. So,
Yeah.
for example, there's some companies out of Saskatchewan, out of Brazil, out of Republic of Congo that, were founded, I'm not kidding, during our first potash company, when we established Potash One in 2007. They
Yeah.
basically mushroomed around the same time. So they're still around. The reason most of them didn't go forward, they're still struggling, it's really twofold. They and I'm still getting shocked at why those decisions are made, but still, either they go too large, meaning scale wise, they go
Yeah.
2 million tons or even larger scale, and they go underground, which means your CapEx becomes extremely high, meaning that it becomes very unmanageable for a small company. So, to put it bluntly, if you have $150 million market cap and you need to raise $2 billion, that's a tall order. No matter how good you are, what kind of magic touch you have, I mean, that is a very, very difficult task to execute on. So that's one of the things. And then there are others who run to the other extreme, meaning they decide that, okay, that we cannot handle $2 billion, but we're going to go to, let's say, we're going to do 100, 150, 200,000 tons a year. Now you have subscale, and then really there's no money available for that either, because you're kind of neither here nor there. So it's a But also remember, some of these projects have tremendous issues, logistical and so forth. For example, Saskatchewan projects, they're good projects. I mean, geologically, they're excellent projects. I know them extremely well because obviously our first project was in Saskatchewan. It's just a very difficult to execute, meaning A, finding money for Canadian projects to build them, or to exit. And we sold our project in Saskatchewan to a German company. We sold our Ethiopian project to an Israeli company. So when we get involved with this project, we immediately have, before we get involved, see, we have very clear idea as to how we're going to A, fund it if needed, or how we're going to exit. In other words, who's going to look at this project? Who's going to really need this project? Now, again, bear in mind, one thing, what do you have in mind, the other thing to execute it. Those are two different things. Extremely difficult to actually, make these projects work. But if you look at potash M&A transactions in the West, meaning outside of Chinese companies, and I'll go to China in a second, there have been only three major potash M&A transactions in the last 20 years. We have done two out of those three. Okay, the third one was the BHP buying the company called Anglo Potash, also in Saskatchewan, 2012, I think it was, maybe even earlier. But different story in China, because some Chinese companies went and bought actual projects, not necessarily M&A, but they bought projects in Laos, in Southeast Asia. They bought projects in Thailand. One of those projects actually was brought to production in Laos, right? So it's a little bit different environment. It's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's a typical open market situation, but they obviously they've been very successful there as well. So we kind of have better experience. We've been very fortunate in this business. But having said that, again, it's a tough slog. It's not like you go in and everything goes smooth. So you still have to work hard. And that's why, when you said I'm the founder, I'm not the only one. Our team is the founder, actually.
So you mentioned your team. I don't know if there's any significant people that would be relevant to share about, but if you can, if you can tell us a little bit more about yourself and just kind of why you chose potash. I mean, like you said, first of all, I'm not like completely sold, but I'm pretty sold on that. Your experience and your team that you guys, if some other guys are doing 15 years and you guys are doing 6 months, makes me wonder what you guys are doing correct. But when I hear 15 years, I also hear this is not without risk. So why did you
Absolutely.
enter into the potash business? What kind of upside do you see with not only a millennial, but just the industry as opposed to maybe investing in a, gold and silver mining company?
Yeah, Steve, that's a key question that we ask ourselves before we get involved with any project, I mean, with any specific project. But we usually look at, as I mentioned earlier, at a number of minerals first. In other words, we'll look at their supply demand picture going forward. We'll look at specifics of it. So if you look at potash, and I'll give you an example of potash, it's really there's no constraint on the supply side, right? So, as I mentioned, in Canada, Russia, Belarus, there's enough capacity there. The Jordan and Israel also produce potash. So it's, among those five countries, almost 80% of potash, is secure, so to speak. But what we've been looking for, and we know this business or this sector quite well, is a project, a decent project, a decent meaning, cost competitive project, that is not in one of those jurisdictions, meaning in a neutral jurisdiction. Why? Because think about this, about half a dozen countries produce almost all of world's potash, and the rest of the world is actually at their mercy. They're all net importers. U.S. imports almost 97, 98% of its potash. Brazil imports all of its potash. India imports 100% of its potash. China imports almost 70% of its potash. So, I just mentioned large countries, right? Large ag countries.
Yeah.
Everyone else is in the same, on the same boat, except for Canada, Russia, and Belarus, right? So they have plenty of their own potash. So that is one of the key things we look at outside of Saskatchewan, outside of Russia, outside of Belarus, outside of the certain Middle Eastern countries, and also geopolitically neutral, meaning, for example, in Gabon, they're open to American capital, they're open to the European capital, the Chinese operate, they're Turks, Gulf countries. Those are very important for us because we have no idea where we're going to get capital from, where we're going to exit, how we're going to build the alliances to build these projects and infrastructure. So those are the things we look at. Now, you ask why potash? It wasn't just potash, right? Once we sold Millennial Lithium, we're looking at potash and a couple of, I'm not going to mention what other commodities, but we're looking at some other things as well. It just, unfortunately, we could not find something that was a strong project at the right price. And that's a key thing too. Many, many years ago when I was a young man, someone who had done very well in business told me, says, young man, you make money when you buy, not when you sell. So meaning that you got to, negotiate a very good price. So, in this case, because potash was kind of overlooked, nobody was interested in potash, and this particular group ended up with this project almost incidentally, and they happened to know us, and they came to us, and we looked at it and said, hold on for a second. I mean, there's definitely potential here. Frankly, Steve, until we took this project and put this on the potash map again, so to speak.
Yeah.
All of these potash companies that I mentioned 10, 15 years ago, they were dead in the water. Suddenly they came back to life. One of them went public in the US, the other one decided to take it public. So in other words, we kind of, they're, writing our coattails, which is perfectly fine. But I'm saying that, we kind of showed what can be done here and showed that this potential could be extremely competitive, as competitive, of course, with large producers, but it wasn't just potash. We did look at some other projects too. With this particular project, we thought that we had a very good project at a reasonable cost, so we proceeded.
Farhad, if you can tell us if you have any milestones or news for us to look forward to in the next few months into the rest of the year, sort of thing. But also, if you can tell us where we can find you, if we have any questions, how people can reach out, and if you can give your, take your socials or whatever you can give for us to follow you.
Sure. Steve, we're on all socials, but don't ask me to give you the details because I'm not on social myself. But if you go to Millennial Potash, you will see it. Of course, we have our info at, I think, millennial.com. So if people can email there, they can email and ask me questions directly. I usually respond pretty quickly myself or our team members as well. In terms of milestones, we're working on all the aspects that we've mentioned, Steve. So meaning on infrastructure, on the port, on natural gas pipelines, on power. Obviously, we're doing, feasibility study that I mentioned. We're doing social and environmental impact studies, and we're doing drilling as well. So in the next few weeks and months, we're going to have news coming up on infrastructure development. I think those will be that particular announcement hopefully will be very, very important because that will probably kind of remove potential cap on the scalability of this project, meaning our ability to ship the product from there. I mean, it can go actually much higher than what we originally thought. And the second thing is the drilling. So we're doing active drilling right now. So again, in the next few weeks, first drill will come back from this phase, and then subsequently others will be finished. And then towards the end of the year, we're planning to finish a feasibility study. Early next year, we'll be done with environmental social impact studies as well. And we're also working on funding. So those term sheets will be announced as well as we move towards the end or towards completion of these major programs. And of course, we're working on the strategic. I didn't mention that because with strategic angle, meaning potential strategic investment, potential M&A, we're working on all these angles as well. But I can't really comment until obviously we have something on the table, then it will become public at that point. But we're pursuing that angle as well. So between now and the end of the year, we'll have a lot of news on both the infrastructure drilling and financing and the works as well.
For our listeners, Millennial Potash has not paid for this interview. I am not currently an investor, although that may change. Please do your own due diligence. I'm not giving investment advice, but one of the ways you can do that is reach out to Farhad with any questions you might have. Follow their website, follow their ticker, and Farhad, thank you so much for sharing about your story.
Thanks so much, Steve. Great question. Thanks a lot.